I'm Bob Levicky. This weekend's rain will help, but drought conditions have worsened in Virginia. Childhood vaccination gaps contribute to a measles outbreak in Buckingham County. And how are Virginians who got dozed a year ago doing now? This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, May 22nd. Although we are now getting rain relief this week, drought conditions have worsened in our area. The most recent report from the U.S. Drought Monitor for Virginia now lists areas in the Shenandoah Valley from Harrisonburg to south of Stanton and Charlottesville through Southside Virginia under extreme drought. Almost all other parts of the state are experiencing severe drought. These conditions threaten crop yields, trees, and dairy production. Rainfall this weekend and next week could alleviate some of those concerns, but so far this year, Virginia remains far behind yearly precipitation averages. As we head into the Memorial Day weekend, motorists who are not driving electric vehicles will be paying more for gas. According to the online monitor Gas Buddy, a gallon of regular gas now costs well over $4 in most places in our area. Gas prices in Harrisonburg, Stanton, and Charlottesville range from around $4.20 to near $4.40 a gallon. That's around 45 or 50% higher than gas prices before President Trump launched his war on Iran. A measles outbreak spreading through Buckingham County has infected at least 17 people, prompting health officials to warn that additional cases are likely still unidentified and highlighting childhood vaccination gaps across parts of central Virginia. WMRA's Angelie Schindler reports.
In a statewide alert issued May 13th to healthcare providers, the Virginia Department of Health, or VDH, said none of the infected patients reported recent travel, suggesting the virus is spreading locally. The following day, Buckingham County Public Schools informed families that there were no confirmed measles cases within the division, but they had already begun reviewing student immunization records and contacting families of students who may not be fully immunized. The outbreak arrives more than two decades after measles was declared eliminated in the U.S. in 2000. Before the measles vaccine became available in 1963, the virus caused hundreds of deaths and tens of thousands of hospitalizations each year nationwide. Now, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, say the return of outbreaks in places like Texas, New York, and now Virginia reflect a complicated mix of declining vaccination rates, pandemic-era healthcare disruptions, misinformation, and pockets of vulnerability within communities. Measles is among the most contagious viruses known. Because measles spread so efficiently, epidemiologists say communities generally need vaccination rates above 95% to prevent outbreaks through community immunity. Dr. Lisa M. Lee, an epidemiologist and bioethicist at Virginia Tech, says,
"We used to use the term herd immunity. We use a nicer term now, community immunity. Because this particular virus is so contagious, we are looking at what public health gets worried about is any community that has fewer than 95% of people immunized."
State data suggests some central Virginia communities are falling below that threshold. In the Piedmont Health District, which includes Buckingham and Cumberland counties, and much of Virginia's south side, nearly 9% of kindergartners had incomplete measles, mumps, and rubella vaccination records at the beginning of the 2024-2025 school year. About 4% of 7th graders had incomplete records. Other nearby districts reported even higher rates. In the Central Virginia Health District, which covers Lynchburg and areas just east of Roanoke, roughly 15% of kindergartners, including those at private schools, had incomplete MMR vaccination records. Buckingham County Schools specifically reported relatively small numbers of students with incomplete vaccinations, just four kids between Buckingham County Primary School and Central Virginia Christian School. Public health officials caution, however, that school immunization surveys are imperfect snapshots rather than real-time vaccination maps. Erica Hunter, the immunization data and outreach manager with VDH's Division of Immunization, said the state's annual survey captures vaccination status only on the first day of school and may not reflect students who later become compliant.
And that data is looking at one point in time, so it looks at the very first day of school. A child may or a student may be up to date by the next day. We don't capture that.
Hunter said incomplete vaccination records can stem from several different causes, including delayed paperwork, missed appointments, transportation barriers, disruptions to routine health care during the COVID pandemic, and vaccine hesitancy.
So I think it's multifaceted. I don't think it's just one thing.
Virginia requires students entering kindergarten to receive two doses of the MMR vaccine, though families may seek religious exemptions. While the Buckingham County Public School District hasn't seen any measles cases, the first reported patient was identified as a school-aged child, and the majority of cases across the state involved children under 13, indicating the virus may be circulating among kids outside the public school system. Lee said measles exploits gaps in immunity wherever they exist, particularly in highly connected communities where people gather closely through schools, churches, workplaces, and family networks.
Part of that interdependence that we have means that we have an obligation, a moral obligation, to help take care of each other.
For Lee, the challenge facing public health officials involves rebuilding trust in scientific and medical institutions after years of political polarization and online misinformation. She said false claims linking vaccines and autism, originating from a now discredited and falsified study published in the 1990s, continue to shape fears among some parents.
It's not that they're bad, they're concerned about their kids, right? That's what we want all parents to be.
Public health officials emphasize that measles can cause severe complications, especially among infants, immunocompromised people, and unvaccinated children. The virus can lead to pneumonia, deafness, brain swelling, blindness, and death.
If measles was nothing, we wouldn't have worked so hard to get a vaccine for it. So it isn't nothing. It is a serious and can be very deadly and crippling disease.
As Buckingham County health officials continue monitoring the outbreak, schools and healthcare providers are urging residents to review vaccination records, monitor symptoms, and remain aware of potential exposures. For WMRA News, I'm Anjali Schindler.
We have posted a longer version of this story with links to more information at WMRA.org and on our app. VDH has launched a measles dashboard due to the uptick in cases. The dashboard shows how many cases, hospitalizations, and deaths have been reported, as well as case numbers by age. The dashboard will be updated on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Enrollment in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program is down in Virginia after new restrictions and changes to the program. Hannah Davis-Reed with our partner station VPM News has more.
SNAP saw new work requirements added for eligibility last July that also disqualified a large portion of lawfully present non-citizens, including those with refugee or asylum status. Eligibility is determined on renewal cycles, where people will lose their benefits if they no longer qualify. As people face unenrollment, service providers in Charlottesville are trying to meet community needs. Kar Anderson Miller is the founder of International Neighbors.
Because of nothing that they did incorrectly, nothing they did wrong, the green card just has not been issued, then they're missing out on a tremendous amount of support.
Local food banks like Loaves and Fishes are partnering with service providers to fill the gap. Volunteers from International Neighbors pick up food from around 25 families and deliver groceries every other week. Paola Covarrubias, the pantry's community engagement coordinator, has seen people come pick up food for neighbors they know are in need.
Even helping out a neighbor would be the easiest thing. Someone who you know personally and who that family's able to trust would make, I think, the situation a lot smoother.
Cases are still being reevaluated by the Virginia Department of Social Services for eligibility.
Hannah Davis-Reed reporting. It's been more than a year since President Trump and his Department of Government Efficiency made massive cuts to the federal workforce. How are DOGE Virginians doing now? Radio IQ's Brad Kuttner reports.
Earlier this month, President Trump praised himself for cutting what's believed to be hundreds of thousands of federal employees as part of his DOGE initiative.
And they don't like me for doing it, but a year later, they like me because they end up having a much better job.
But 30-year-old Sarah Nichols, an implementing partner with USAID until she was canned by Trump, disagrees.
I wish I still had savings left. I feel very unstable.
According to Nichols, her old gig was what DOGE was tasked with doing, searching and eliminating waste and fraud in the international aid space. But now she can't find work as the international relief industry, she said, was decimated by DOGE.
Save the Children or World Vision, Catholic Relief Services, they all were pretty much the top donors of USAID, and I know they had a huge impact on those services.
As for those faith-based relief agencies,
we are trying to do more with less.
That's Kristen Larcher, Director of Refugee and Immigration Services at Commonwealth Catholic Charities. DOGE cuts led them to slashing their staff in half when federal funds were cut by about 80%. That's made it harder to support the people they serve, war refugees from Syria and Ukraine, as well as Afghans who aided U.S. troops in the conflict there. There's also been a drastic cut in the number of new refugees admitted, in which Larcher finds a tiny silver lining.
We do have a little bit more time. We're trying to take advantage of that and provide more one-on-one assistance.
But that shred of optimism may be short-lived. Larcher is expecting more federal cuts to impact their work in 2027. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, released its first projections for this year's Atlantic hurricane season on Thursday. As Radio IQ meteorologist Nick Gilmore reports, officials say now is the time to prepare for the fast approaching season.
NOAA is predicting that this year's season, which begins on June 1st, has a 55% chance of being below average. Here's Neil Jacobs, Undersecretary of Commerce for Oceans and Atmosphere, describing what that means.
This equates to 8 to 14 named storms with winds at or above 39 miles an hour. Of these, 3 to 6 hurricanes with winds at or above 74 miles an hour, and 1 to 3 major hurricanes, that's your category 3 to 5, with winds at or above 111 miles an hour.
NOAA says the below average forecast is largely due to signs pointing towards a shift to El Nino in the coming months. El Nino conditions tend to lead to more wind shear in the Atlantic, which makes it harder for tropical systems to develop. However, National Weather Service Director Ken Graham says everyone should take necessary precautions regardless of the forecast.
And don't let words like below average, don't let all those words change the way you prepare. It just takes one.
NOAA is rolling out several new tools this year to help the public be more informed. That includes new forecast models powered by artificial intelligence and expanded flood inundation mapping. Over the last decade, more than half of fatalities from tropical systems in this country were caused by flooding, many of those in inland communities. I'm Nick Gilmore.
Democrats in Virginia's congressional delegation are calling on the National Park Service to bring back discontinued educational materials. Radio IQ's Michael Pope explains it's the latest fight over how to interpret history.
Here are the sentences at the heart of the debate. Quote, in 1829, Robert E. Lee promised to serve in the Army and protect the United States. In 1861, he broke his promise and fought for slavery, end quote. Congressman Don Beyer of Alexandria says removing Junior Ranger activity booklets with that explanation of history is unacceptable.
So, yes, this is just one children's booklet at one Arlington house in above the cemetery. But it is representative, emblematic of the erasure of history all across this country right now.
Last summer, Department of Interior Secretary Doug Burgum issued an order to remove content that inappropriately disparages Americans, living or dead. Now, the Arlington House is caught in the crossfire of the latest battle over who owns history. And Senator Mark Warner worries about what's next.
Are we going to suddenly say there was never slavery in America? Are we going to say there was never a period of Jim Crow? Are we going to say in Virginia we never went through massive resistance? It's disrespectful to our history. It's disrespectful to African Americans who were the brunt of a lot of that bias and prejudice.
Democrats in the Virginia delegation are calling on the National Park Service to restore the Junior Ranger activity booklets as soon as possible, hopefully in time for the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence in July. I'm Michael Pope.
Virginia Democrats are butting heads between themselves over vetoes in the state budget. Radio IQ politics analyst Jeff Shapiro joins Michael to recap the week in politics and state government.
Governor Abigail Spanberger issued so many vetoes this week that Dwayne Yancey over at Cardinal News called it the Tuesday afternoon massacre. Jeff Shapiro, what's going on with all these vetoes from a Democratic governor of bills that came from a Democratic General Assembly?
Yeah, maybe we should call the governor Abby the Bill Slayer. She has pushed her first year veto total to 29, rejecting and saving the best for last legislation creating, you know, a commercial marijuana market. This is the third gubernatorial in 3 years. But to your point, this is the first time a Democrat passed measure is falling to a Democratic governor. And this has a lot of Democrats angry and annoyed, most notably the patrons of this bill. Now, the governor has an image problem, and one suspects that this is part of the reason she spiked this bill. Remember, she was elected as sort of the can-do, bipartisan, apolitical, centrist, solution-oriented Democrat, and in very short order, because, you know, governing is a lot tougher than running for governor. Polling showed that a lot of Virginians were viewing her as a partisan hack. So here is an effort clearly to sort of recalibrate her image.
So the clock is ticking for a budget. The end of June is the deadline, and we still don't have a budget. Jeff Shapiro, explain the incentive for Democrats in the General Assembly to want to run out the clock here to the end of June before they have a budget compromise.
All right, the longer this goes on, Michael, the fewer opportunities Abigail Spanberger as governor would have to tweak, amend, revise, or seek changes to the budgetary handiwork of the legislature. And so I think it's safe to say that Louise Lucas and Luke Torian are going to run down the clock. Now, of course, at the center, the core of this dispute over the budget is tax breaks, continued tax breaks for data centers. Democrats, particularly on the Senate side, want to use that money for schools and other services.
And the state's powerhouse utility, Dominion Energy, may be involved in a merger here that could radically transform Virginia politics. How is this all going to shake out?
Well, you know, it's interesting. If this merger with NextEra in Florida goes through, and there are many, many regulatory hurdles to clear, a company that's really synonymous with the history of this state, going back to its earliest days, will vanish from the landscape. Dominion's roots do go back to the late 1700s here in Virginia. And of course, its antecedent, Virginia Electric and Power Company, was instrumental in the creation of, in 1947, of the right to work law. Now, Dominion, serving a state with the largest number of data centers in the state, is going to be delivering a lot of big business that it can't fully serve with its current grid, and it'll be delivering this to a much bigger company with very deep pockets. And this is going to make for closer scrutiny of a merger that would create a regulated giant, the world's largest regulated electric utility, at DC's front door.
And finally, that Democratic gerrymander that Democrats wanted to do with a congressional map, we're going to throw that in the garbage can because the Supreme Court of the United States threw that out. What does that mean for all the candidates who were going to be running for Congress?
Yeah, well, it's no surprise that the Supreme Court of the United States refused to reverse, block, impede that SCOVA ruling reversing the referendum in which voters narrowly approved this mid-decade anti-Trump congressional gerrymander. What it means now, of course, is that a lot of candidates in would-be districts are dropping out. Among them, Dorothy McAuliffe, the former First Lady of Virginia.
All right, that's all the time that we've got for this week. My name is Michael Pope, and we've been joined by politics analyst and UVA scholar Jeff Shapiro. Talk to you next week.
Here's to a red, white, and blue Memorial Day weekend.
Finally today, tribal nations in Virginia are trying to stop development just outside Richmond at the historical birthplace of Powhatan, the father of Pocahontas, and a sacred chief of their ancestors. Tribal leaders met on Tuesday to explain the site's importance. Radio IQ's Pamela D'Angelo was there.
Chief Powhatan ruled over 32 tribes back in the 1600s. And this place that we're talking about is a sacred, vital, sovereignty place that has gone back for many, many centuries.
Lois Costello Carter is a member of the Mattapani tribe. She's talking about Tree Hill Farm, a 530-acre property that overlooks Richmond and the James River. For thousands of years before colonization, indigenous people lived and prospered there. Ashley Spivey is a citizen of the Pamunkey tribe and an anthropologist.
There's evidence that our ancestors were there and that the other historical moments that are in that landscape, the Civil War, the plantation history, the enslaved history is also present there. Because that's only been preliminary work, there's much more work, in our opinions, that needs to be done to fully understand the extent of the village that was Powhatan, where our ancestors were buried, and that work hasn't been done.
The site has great spiritual meaning to the tribes. Here's Chickahominy Second Assistant Chief Troy Atkins and Eastern Chickahominy Chief Joanne Howard.
That is a sacred site to us. Even walking on the land and touching artifacts that have been excavated from it, it's a humbling feeling that I'm walking on land that my ancestors did.
I heard one person say, it's like taking President Washington's home place, Mount Vernon, and making it into a subdivision.
From the Rappahannock Tribal Center in Indian Neck, I'm Pamela D'Angelo.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy your Friday.